Live from the Old National Bank State Street Studio, this is WMVP WSHE HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station. Welcome to the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
Come on in to the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. You can also check us out on 100.3 HD2. Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan. We talk golf with you usually on Saturday mornings, but today we are with you on a Sunday morning after Bears football occupied the airwaves here on ESPN 1000 yesterday. You want to join us? 312-332-3776. Mike is out at Bowes Creek Country Club in Elgin, Illinois. So let's head on out there. Mike, how's it going out there in Elgin at Bowes Creek?
Good morning, Tyler. Good morning, everybody in Chicago. Yeah, out here overlooking the putting green, the first green, the 18th hole on the backside of the clubhouse here at Bowes Creek. We have a Chamber of Commerce Sunday here. In fact, we have a lot of the players going off in quarter zips right now, but a pair of shorts, knowing that today is going to be absolutely glorious and perfect. But, yeah, the golf course looks fantastic. This is also the home of our CDGA Scramble Finals on September 22nd. So we love our arrangement with Bowes Creek and the Highlands of Elgin. I know we're going to be chatting with Mike Lehman, the Director of Operations and the Bowes Creek Head Professional later to hear a little bit more about what they have going out here at Golf Elgin. So all is good. Yeah, after what a week we had down south at Olympia Fields.
It was fantastic. You look at all the drama, and that's where we start here. With Victor Hovland, he fires a course record 61, seven birdies on the back nine. Maybe the best round of golf we've seen this year. I mean, you could also point to what Colin Morikawa did earlier this week as well when he had a 61 down at East Lake in Atlanta for the Tour Championship. But I look at what Hovland did, the stakes, it being a Sunday as well, to elevate himself up the leaderboard and ultimately take Olympia Fields by two strokes. And that right there kind of shows you the golf that he's playing. He's had a phenomenal season. He won the Memorial out at Jack's Place. He then goes out and wins at Olympia Fields. He's had a great year. He's won some significant events, still without a major, though. But he is one of these up-and-coming names, and what a great champion to have at Olympia Fields.
No doubt. I think Victor Hovland is a perfect representation of who Chicago is, what Chicago golf is all about. Grinding, you know, hardworking, never giving up, gritty. And that's the kind of golf Hovland tends to play. But to your point, we may have seen the greatest back nine of golf played not only this year, but in decades, if not ever. He made 10 birdies to go along with one bogey, but 28 on the back nine on Sunday when it really matters. When you can put your game on display at the highest stage. Now, remember, he's playing against the top 30 in the world. This is not a little pitch and putt, you know, continental breakfast shotgun start here. This is the best of the best, and he went out, and as we went off the air last week, we were thinking this is a Matt Fitzpatrick, Scottie Scheffler, both 11 under. Let's see what happens. And out of nowhere, here comes Victor. And he needed to birdie both 17 and 18 to beat the rest of the field by one, which he did, as Scottie and company, as they got to 16, your favorite hole, both Scottie and Matt saw their lead slip away on the hole that they could have really brought in the, you know, the pinch hitter, Tyler Aki, to make that, you know, four iron birdie for him. Right there, that's where everything changed. They were making bogey, and he's finishing birdie, and putting on what I think is just one of the most amazing rounds of golf on one of the most amazing venues, that in Olympia Fields. And people think, you know, do they have to redo the golf course? Is it too easy? No. Victor Hovland had a round. He went into what we call the zone. He was in that zone all Sunday afternoon, especially on the back nine. So that golf course is as good as any. They don't need to touch it. They don't need to do a thing to it. It's just when you get the world's greatest on the top of their games like they are now, you're going to see special things happen. And we did last week here at Olympia Fields.
Yeah, you saw the 62 on Friday from Max Homa. You thought, oh, that's a new course record there. That'll be sitting around for a while. Nope, it only lasted about 48 hours. And then here comes Victor Hovland. He had 12 threes on that final round scorecard. 12 threes on that scorecard. He was absolutely dialed in. And just the way, too, that even if he did go wide off the tee, even if he did struggle a little bit in certain areas, boy, the way that he rallied in some of his approach shots to go out and still not just make birdies, but make tap-in birdies from difficult spots on the golf course from the approach. It was incredible to see the way that he closed that out. And when he started to make his move on Sunday, there was nothing that anybody could do to stop him. He was just that good down the stretch.
He was just so dialed in. And I think how he played 17 and how he played 18. He played 18 like it's no big deal. And, I mean, these guys were struggling to make pars, let alone there was only a few birdies on the hole to begin with. And he just did it as a matter of factly under the, you know, the toughest and most stressful of conditions. And the guy just played like a champion that he is and very, very well deserved. One other thing I would like to say, though, is how the Chicago fans were this past weekend. Mm-hmm. We showed why we are one of the greatest golf markets in the country. The way the fans reacted to both the Americans as well as the Europeans and the way that they played and the way that they embraced Hovland. Yeah. This is a guy that we're going to be turning around rooting against here in the next few weeks. But I thought the Chicago fans were absolutely fantastic. They were loud. They know golf. We came across as very golf knowledgeable. And I think many different times throughout the telecast, even the announcers referenced how strong and how good the fans of Chicago are, which is why we need to have professional golf in our community every year.
312-332-3776. If you want to join us, if you were at the BMWs, let us know what you saw out there on that amazing, amazing Sunday where Victor Hovland rallies from a few spots back of the leaderboard and fires a course record 61. You witness history if you were at Olympia Fields. We want to hear from you. 312-332-3776. It's the lowest final round ever in FedEx Cup playoff history. That is from Victor Hovland, and you saw it at Olympia Fields here in Chicago. 312-332-3776. By the way, this segment is sponsored by Geneva National. Experience 54 holes of legendary golf at Destination Geneva National. All right, so some of the other things to sort of take away from Olympia Fields as well. I think, boy, if Scotty could get the flat stick working, man. I mean, you look at the way that he just struggled down the stretch, and these were some putts that you'd expect the top golfer in the world, or at least one of the top three golfers in the world, would be hitting with pretty solid regularity, and he just struggled with the putter. I mean, it's been the knock on his game. If he could putt, we would be looking at a whole different dimension of golfer. He's great as he is, but boy, if he could get the putter working, he'd be a completely different golfer out there. He struggled, and the putter failed him down the stretch. That's ultimately what allowed Victor Hovland to make up that ground and end up winning this thing by two strokes.
Oh, absolutely. If Scotty could putt, Scotty'd be running away with everything this year, including this weekend, which I'm sure we'll get to here in a bit. But it's been really uncomfortable watching Scotty Scheffler putt over the last few weeks. He made a putter change at the BMW. That one didn't work. So I think he's back to the original one or something like it. But at the same time, yeah, his stroke is a little off. I mean, I think he's yanking it inside a little bit, coming from the inside too much. And I think he's getting a lot of advice from a lot of different people. And I think at this point, he's kind of in a bad place in his head mentally when it comes to the flat stick. And instead of looking at the hole the size of a peach basket, it's looking like the size of a baby aspirin to him at this point. So, you know, he's going to have to fight through this. I think all the players go through it at one point or another in their career, if not multiple times. But I heard an interesting comment over the throughout the week, and one of them was a suggestion to do kind of what Lucas Glover has done and Adam Scott. A lot of the taller guys that have now gone to some form of a long putter or a different version, that's what they're kind of thinking. Maybe that's what Scotty should do, because it seems that everything else that he's trying currently isn't seem to be working. Now, working for him versus working for us, two different stories. But at the caliber of play that he is accustomed to being at and putting like, he is nowhere near the Scotty Scheffler from a year or two ago. I mean, it's just, it's like I said, I won't even watch him, so I protect my own ability to putt now. So it's just that. It's just that gruesome to watch at times.
You don't want the putter by osmosis from Scotty Scheffler coming your way there. Because, and you bring up a good point, all right? So he stands at 6'3". He does look uncomfortable over the putter. And that, to me, is, I don't know if it's a mental, I mean, at this point, it's got to be a mental thing for him. When you're as good of a golfer as Scotty Scheffler is, I don't think it's a physical thing. It has to be between the ears. And I don't think it's at a Lucas Glover yips level right now, but I think it's something that, boy, if he doesn't figure it out quickly, it could be something that goes downhill pretty. I mean, it would be a real tough demise for Scotty Scheffler, because he is holding back a world of potential right now because of what the putter is doing to him at this moment.
He is, and he's just got to continue to go through the process and trying to figure it out. It's, like I said, it's ugly to watch, but we're rooting for him because he's too good a player. And here's the thing. He's able to play and score and be at a level only because of his ball striking capabilities. He's one of the best, if not the best ball striker on tour. And the players will tell you as such. Now, when he's off a little on his ball striking, one of the pros said that he is still in the top 25 when he's off on his ball striking. So that gives you an idea just how dialed in he can be from tee to green, and that's how he can make up shots on the field. But he is one of the lowest players professionally in the field on strokes gained on the putting green this entire year, let alone the last few weeks. It's been abysmal. It's just been abysmal.
You look at, I mean, he would have walked away from Olympia Fields with the trophy if he had not had the putter let him down as much as it did during the course of that final round. And it was just little things here and there. Like, he's on the green with Matt Fitzpatrick, and you're thinking, okay, Fitz, boom, knocked it in. All right, here comes Scott. Oh, and then he pushes it right, or he pulls it left. And you just wouldn't expect to see that out of the top player in the world in Scotty Scheffler. I mean, he's been there all year long. He's had such a great last two seasons when he's really emerged onto the scene. He had such a hot start to 2022 last year. It's been something that you just would not expect out of someone of Scotty Scheffler's capability here. And imagine if this were someone like a Rory or a Rahm, and we're talking about the putter like this, because if those guys weren't putting, if they were putting at the level of Scotty Scheffler, I don't know if they would have the same level, because you're right, his ball striking ability is second to none. It is one of the most impressive things we see on tour, which, to be honest, for some people, it makes no sense. When you look at the way he swings through and just shuffles his feet and you see him sliding all over the place, you sometimes wonder if he's even wearing golf spikes at times, right? Because of the way that he's flying around out there on the fairways and on the tee boxes. But he has certainly found a way to make it work, tee to green. But the green is something that if he wants to be vaulted into that upper echelon of some of the greatest golfers of all time, he's going to have to figure out the putter.
He is, and it's funny, you reference his footwork. He's like the Fred Astaire, which is going way beyond your time there, Tyler. But he is fleet of foot, and he's a heck of an athlete to be able to do what he's doing. I would not suggest his footwork for most of us by any stretch of the imagination. But last year, he made everything in 2022. He was making everything, it seemed like. So he went from being one of the better putters on the planet to now being one of the worst. But as you mentioned, it comes back to his ball striking skills. And if he can dial in that putter and get that back, he will be by far the best player on tour, in the world for that matter, on the planet. Because he almost already is, and his putting is just holding him back from really running away from the 2023, you know, playoff season from the rest of the field. You know, he started out with a, you know, with the lead, and he can't hold it, and it's all because of the putter.
Right. Now, real quick before we hit the break, one guy who I'm happy he was in the mix there on Sunday. It was Matt Fitzpatrick because, okay, Northwestern kid playing in his collegiate backyard here. I look at what Fitzpatrick did, and he's kind of struggled ever since he won the U.S. Open last year. He did win the RBC Heritage this year, but he's been up and down. Really haven't seen a consistent game from Matt Fitzpatrick for the most of 2023, but he wins the RBC, and then he ends up in the mix in that final group, tied for second when it's all said and done at the BMWs. I was happy to see Fitzpatrick. I think that's a good player to have in the mix, and to have a guy, major winner from a year ago, be in that final stretch, be having a chance to go for it there on 18 to potentially force a playoff with Hovland. I was really thrilled to see what Fitzpatrick did across the weekend, really, at the BMWs.
Likewise, I think Matthew Fitzpatrick brought a little positive news to the Northwestern, you know, alumni in our city, just to be able to root for somebody doing something good for a change. And watching him develop as a young player has been a joy to watch. And as he wins the Open, now he's had to deal with life as a U.S. Open, you know, champion. And all of the new constraints and, you know, demands of his time and all that good stuff. So learning how to continue to be a professional with your first major under your belt is always going to be a challenge, because this is new, uncharted territories for him professionally. Obviously, winning the U.S. Amateur was a major in that regard. But for him, you know, trying to adjust to life as a professional golfer, being, you know, a U.S. Open winner, I think has taken some time. But I think you're starting to see him come around. And again, fortunately or unfortunately, he's doing it at a time just before, again, the Ryder Cup. He's going to be another guy that we're going to be like, oh, yeah, loved him in Chicago, can't stand him now because he's killing us. And but you're right. I think Matthew Fitzpatrick is good for the game. I think it's cool how his brother has also come onto the tour. Right. So, yeah, a great guy to have right there in the mix. And I foresee a lot of great things for Matthew Fitzpatrick in the future. And I'll go back to a comment you made about Victor having not won a major championship. I'll say this, yet, because I think this year is grooming him to win a major next year. And it would not surprise me. And I'll go out right now and say I'll pick him for the Masters.
Ooh, all right. I like that pick there. All right, when we come back, I do have a Victor Hovland question for you, because he has found six. He's got a six-stroke lead right now at the Tour Championship down at East Lake. Can Victor Hovland be a face of the golf world? Can he be the face of the golf world? We'll talk about that when we come back. This segment is sponsored by Geneva National. It's Bruins 54 holes of legendary golf at Destination Geneva National.
This is the CDGA Golf Show, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club, ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app. Golf is on your mind and on the air right now. This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
Made birdie here yesterday. It looks like a good line.
Oh, my, does it ever.
Whoa, right next to the hole. Up to the moment. Victor Hovland at his absolute best.
Jim Nance on CBS there as Victor Hovland carded a 61. That was the way he wrapped up 18 with a birdie there. He finishes 17 and 18. Birdie, seven of his nine on the back nine were of the birdie variety there. This segment sponsored by Tour Edge. Tyler Rocky, Mike Gilligan with you, usually on Saturdays on the CDGA Golf Show. Today, we are with you on a Sunday from 8 to 10 a.m. right here on ESPN 1000. We'll be back on Saturday with you next week. If you want to join the show, 312-332 3776. All right, so Victor Hovland has a great chance today. He's currently got a 6-stroke lead at the Tour Championship. It would be kind of tough to see him, especially the way that he's playing right now, fumble this one away. But 6-stroke lead, he is the heavy, heavy favorite to wrap this thing up here and win the FedEx Cup playoffs. But when you look at sort of the faces of golf right now, I think Victor Hovland, even though he doesn't have a major, although Mike is calling a shot, he is saying Masters 2024, you will see Victor Hovland with a green jacket on. When you look at the way that Victor has played down the stretch here, you're hoping, all right, everything is going to carry over into 2024, and you could see him break through and finally get that first major. He's in that hunger phase still. We talked a little bit about it with guys like Fitzpatrick, and we've said it in the past with guys like Morikawa and Jordan Spieth. Like, sometimes you get to a point and you start winning major, and sometimes it's plural, majors, and then you see the game dip off a little bit, and they're not quite there after that because of all the other obligations that come with being a major winner and all the sponsorship opportunities, all these photo ops and events that you have to go to. Victor Hovland, though, he's got a chance to pick up that first major next season. But can he become the face of golf? And really, who is the face of golf right now? When you look at, there's a couple of options here. You've got Scotty, you've got Rahm, you've got Rory. Obviously, Tiger's still in the mix. But I think to the diehard golf fan, I don't think Tiger Woods is really the face of golf anymore with everything that, I mean, we just haven't seen him on a golf course all that much. And it's tough to be the face of a sport when you're not playing at the degree that Tiger is right now. So to you, Mike, right now, who is the face of golf when you look across the PGA Tour? Or if you want to pick someone from LIV, go ahead. I wouldn't personally pick someone from LIV right now just because of it's tough to be the face when your face time is down. But who in your eyes right now is the face of golf?
Well, it's funny. I agree with you. I think Victor is becoming the ultimate face for us. I think heading into this year, you're looking at your guys like Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, Rory, you know, Rahm, the guys you had mentioned. But I think right before our eyes, we're watching Victor Hovland mature as a player in a way that sort of parallels his amateur career. In his amateur career, you know, he started winning out, you know, over in Norway, the Norwegian amateur, and eventually wins, you know, develops at Oklahoma State and comes on board to win the U.S. Amateur. So then what he does, he turns professional in 2019 and then comes on board and starts winning the PGA Tour events, but nowhere in America. So he wins over in Puerto Rico. Then he wins Mayakoba in 2020 and then turns right back around and wins it again in 2021. But he's still winless in the United States until the Memorial. So what does he do? He wins the Memorial, almost one of the, I would say, B-level majors, if you will. It's darn near close to being considered a major. So then he comes into the playoffs. I just think you're watching a kid take the necessary steps in learning how to win, how to deal with a 6-shot lead today, how to deal with the lead as it is with these guys, let alone a big lead. So when you look at some of his wins, they're by a shot in a playoff. He has a 4-shot win to his credit, and he might have a big one here. But we're watching Victor become what I think could be the ultimate great face for golf. Here's a guy that's so easy to like. He is comes across as just a happy guy, wears his emotions pretty well on his sleeves, and just a real likable first-class guy. But the thing that has impressed me the most, not only what I witnessed at Olympia Fields, but what I'm watching this weekend, is just not only how straight he's driving it, but what he's doing with his approach shots. His distance control and where he's leaving every putt, that next putt, that yes, birdie putt. I started counting, and I couldn't believe how many putts were just a walk in the park, very easy, stress-free birdie opportunities, and he's just tapping in for any miss. You know, he's not having to really work. It's coming to him pretty easy, and I'm watching him let the golf course come to him instead of him trying to force the issue. And I think that's what we're watching him do and mature into a better tactician and strategic player of the game than ever before. And I think it's just this type of performance that we're watching that leads me to want to say he's going to win at Augusta because he's learning how, where to put the ball in the green, where to miss, and to put himself into a strength of what he does best when he is chipping. Not to say he's one of the best chippers of the ball, but he has become significantly better since last year, and I think that's a credit as to why he's won twice already and probably going to win for a third time today.
I think the other thing, too, with Hovland, you bring up how, all right, yeah, he's learning where to miss or sometimes where not to miss, and he's given himself these easy opportunities. It feels like he's made the game easy for himself based on what he's done with his approach shots. How many times did we see on Sunday, this past Sunday, just tap in birdies, right? Tap in birdies is what he was leaving for himself there, because I do think while he has improved with his putting, it feels like he has left some meat on the bone at times because of his putting in some of these other events. I mean, you look at what he's done so far in 2023, he's been top 20 at every single major, including a pair of top 10s, a runner-up finish at the PGA Championship. Like, he's been around. He was top 5 at the Open, not this past season, but in 2022. So he's been in the mix. We've seen him with shares of round one leads at majors and all that stuff as well. So he's been in the mix, but now you're right. It's that next step of, all right, can you close this thing out? Because we've seen how great you look on Thursdays and Fridays, but how great can you look on Sundays, right? And we saw one of the best Sundays we've ever seen this past Sunday. He's got a chance to take home another one this upcoming Sunday. And I just look at everything is sort of, you can see the maturation process right before your eyes, like you've alluded to. You see him taking step by step by step, and now he's getting to that phase of, all right, time to win. And we're going to see him in all likelihood take home the FedEx Cup playoff today, and he's going to make a big chunk of change off of that. But then next season, can you capture that elusive first major? And then what do you look like after the major as well? Because, you know, it's great to win that first major, but if you want to be the face of the sport, you're going to have to prove that you can do it time and time again. And Victor Hovland, I think he's got it in him. Again, 25 years old, turns 26 in the middle of September. We're going to see him at the Ryder Cup this year. Everything kind of feels like it's pointing his way to be one of these guys. And if honestly, if he can be a thorn in the American side at the Ryder Cup, that's just even another point on the resume for him to ultimately become that face of golf and join the heads like Rahm and Scheffler and Rory, and even though he's fallen off a little, but I think JT's still in that mix right there as the faces of the entire sport.
Yeah, and you know, Victor is going to try to win on two ends of the spectrum. I mean, here he's coming back from like four shots back to win this thing last weekend. Now he's six shots up and is going to try to win and win by more than six. So he's going to win at two of the most extreme ways. And when you have the ability to do that, that's a dangerous thing for the rest of the field to understand that Victor can win going away and he can win from coming from behind. They often say that winning from behind, there's no pressure, so in certain respects it's considered easier to do. What he's going to be faced with today, some players will tell you that's the hardest thing to do, is to sleep with a lead that's that big. They'd almost rather sleep with a lead that's only one shot. But I think Victor's game is so polished right now and so on. You know, it would take some form of something out of his control to really destroy a great day, a great afternoon of golf for him today, for sure.
It feels like for him, and I think this, to his credit, is one of his best attributes. He doesn't play conservative golf. He really doesn't. He is always in go mode, it feels like. Sometimes you see guys with leads, and they're just, all right, let's save par here, save par there, and it's just you try to get some unblemished numbers on the scorecard. But he feels like he's one of those guys who still, even though he's got a lead, he's still a guy that goes for it. Speaking of the FedEx playoff, let us take a look at what's going down at Eastlake, everything going on. And do you like the FedEx Cup playoff format as well? 312-332-3776. We'll take your calls when we come back. This segment brought to you by Tour Edge.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.
How's your golf game? Yeah, mine too, but more on that later. It's time for more golf talk on the CDGA Golf Show, your guide to golf around the world and in your neighborhood. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
Segment is brought to you by Zero Friction and their new Wheel Pro golf bag. Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan, usually with you on Saturdays from 8 to 10 a.m. here on ESPN 1000. Today with you on Sunday. We will be back on Saturdays every weekend for the rest of the year after the Bears concluded their preseason yesterday afternoon against the Buffalo Bills. You want to join us? 312-332-3776. We've been talking a lot about Victor Hovland and what he's done in the FedEx Cup playoffs, but Greg's in Conway Farms, and he's bringing up something that I wanted to bring up with you a little bit later, but let's get to it now, actually. Greg, what's going on?
Well, thanks for taking my call. I'll preface this by saying that I know Sylvie is not a golfer, but earlier this week, he was proposing with one of his guests that heckling on the PGA Tour is a good thing, and I just wish somebody would clue him in as to how dangerous that would actually be, especially with somebody like Bryson DeChambeau or somebody who really hits the ball hard. Thanks.
Yeah, appreciate the phone call there, Greg. And this kind of came to the forefront this week after, I mean, there was a lot of discussion out at Olympia Fields that, and particularly from John Rahm and Max Homa, who were a little upset with the way that fans were yelling in people's backswings because it was all gambling related. And so John Rahm came out, and this is what he had to say after. He says, "We hear about gambling every single round. That happens way more often than you guys may hear. They're close enough to where if they say to their buddy, 'I bet you $10 he's going to miss it,' you hear it." And then Max Homa said, "I love that people can gamble on golf, but that is one thing I'm worried about. It's on us to stay focused or whatever, but it's just annoying when it happens." And all of this kind of stems from hearing some yelling in the backswing out at Olympia Fields from this past week. And to me, I think that, you know, you're always taught, oh, all right, quiet in the backswing, all that stuff, right? If it became commonplace where there was more noise during people's backswings and just in general in golf, and golf didn't become the quiet sport, right? Like, what's LIV's branding now? It's golf, but louder. That's what they want to be known as. But do you have a problem with everything that you're hearing from John Rahm and Max Homa on the way that some fans are behaving at some of these golf tournaments?
You know, it's a concern. And I think to the callers, you know, interest or suggestion, it does borderline on a little dangerous, only because you are literally going into somebody's office while they are working and in the midst of typing or in the midst of, you know, putting thoughts down on paper, interrupting, and you didn't know the interruption was going to happen. It wasn't planned. So what happens is these guys, because they're so close to the spectators, and the spectators with, you know, wagering being as more commonplace as it is, these are the things that people are saying to one another. Now, how much of this is intended for them to hear is, you know, could be debated, but the fact is they are hearing it. Now, does that make them feel any different over that particular putt or, you know, shot that they're about to execute? Most of them will probably tell you no. But if I'm up in the midst of my swing or in the midst of pulling the putter head back and now something is said, it is no longer white noise. It's something that took my mind away from the task at hand. It didn't scare me. I mean, they always talk about it like in the cartoons or, mm-hmm. you know, in some of the, you know, sitcoms. Oh, it scared him and he, you know, hit the shot wayward. It's not because it scared them. It took their mind off of what they're doing. And at the highest level that they play, there, it's just razor thin, the difference between being on and just a little bit off. And it just takes just that kind of interruption or disruption to throw them off their shot or their game. So when he mentions a guy like Bryson, who's got, you know, a 200-mile-an-hour plus ball speed, and you get him going in the wrong direction, and a spectator could be wearing a golf shot that in a spot that they're not real, you know, it's not going to feel well wherever it hits you when it comes off of his club, I think is what the caller is alluding to. But on the other hand, you know, when it's in jest and when it's being bantered about, you know, from 5-6 rows deep, and it's just major conversation between fans, but now the players have elephant ears and they're sitting on the tee box listening to that and complaining about that, they have no complaint. But if the guy's telling him just before he's about to hit the putt, I bet you're going to miss it, or I bet you're going to make it, that's poor etiquette by the spectator. And I think what happened at 17 with Max Homa this past weekend, he had to have a fan removed for rooting for him to miss. And that's not what we should be doing. And in fact, at the Ryder Cup, we won't be rooting for people openly to make and hit bad shots. Now, as a result of a shot, if it goes in our favor, there'll be some cheering for sure. But it's not going to get contentious as you might with a home and away basketball game type of thing. And, you know, I think that's what we have to keep in mind, that this is still a gentleman's sport, and one that is played in a gentleman way. And there is a certain amount of etiquette, both as a spectator and a player, that we have to keep in mind, and I think it would be in our best interest to do so. But I think that it's something that we're going to be faced with, as much as DraftKings and points bets and all the rest of them keep making these players available to be bet on, that's going to be the byproduct of this thing. But to use it as a means to get after somebody with a direct comment right to them when they're matter of feet and inches away from you, yeah, I'm not so sure that's a real good look. Just like, you know, on an NBA, if somebody's getting on a player from, you know, the floor, you know, generally that doesn't end well either. Usually the spectator's being sent home, the player and the fan are starting to get into it. It's not a good look.
Yeah, and listen, I think gambling is good for golf. I think it's something that, especially when you get some of these lower tier events like a 3M or a Rocket Mortgage or something like that, like, you get eyeballs on some of these all of a sudden that maybe you weren't going to get eyeballs on beforehand. But I do think at the same time, when I think a spectator probably can influence golf much more than they can influence a basketball or a football or a hockey game or a baseball game, a little shriek here or there in a backswing, you do start to get down a slippery slope. Now, there's some places where it is commonplace, like the waste management, but I think overall it does have to come down to common sense, which sometimes in this world we lack a good amount of. But at the same time, I do think that when you everything that you're thinking about from a gambling standpoint, I think golf is one of the few sports where you can impact it as a spectator if you are lacking that golf etiquette. But if you want to join us here, 312-332-3776, how do you feel about the infiltration of gambling with golf and everything that we sort of saw happen at the BMWs, and you hear John Rahm and Max Homa coming out and talking about it? 312-332-3776. We'll take more of your calls when we come back. Tyler Rocky, Mike Gilligan. This segment brought to you by Zero Friction, the most innovative products company in golf.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Welcome into the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Here's your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Rocky.
Here on ESPN 1000, after the BMW Championships, this was really the only sort of blemish that was coming out of the BMWs at Olympia Fields over this past weekend, and it were the comments from John Rahm and Max Homa on the gambling distractions from fans at the BMW Championship. Both of them a little bit frustrated with some of the things they heard from the fans out there, and Max Homan even having to get a fan removed at the BMW Championship. And it all sort of stems from gambling here. You want to join us? 312-332-3776. This segment is brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort. Experience a Michigan masterpiece. Tim is in Aurora. What's up, Tim? Hello, Tim? Let's get Tim back on hold here. Russ is in Palos Heights. What's up, Russ?
Hey, thanks for having me. The Masters has a decorum unlike any other golf course. I would imagine they have some sort of rules or regulations about betting on the golf course as well. Do you guys know of anything like that? Because I'm sure the spectators also help to manage against the vagrants who try to pull off stuff on the golf course.
Yeah, I think one thing in particular that the Masters has a certain advantage for, Russ, is the fact that no phones on the course. So the fact that you don't have phones on the course, you won't have people live betting on their apps and stuff like that. You can't just pull out FanDuel on the course.
Yeah.
Like you won't have that. Now, that obviously can't stop them from making wagers before they come to the course either.
Yeah, I would think, though, that they could have some sort of signs on any of these golf courses that say that on-course betting is not allowed, you know.
Yeah, appreciate the phone call there, Russ. I just don't know if the PGA Tour necessarily wants that. What would you think about that, Mike?
Yeah, because I would.
I think they would encourage betting on their sport because it brings eyeballs, it brings intrigue. And, I mean, people are going to bet on the Masters every single year, but maybe you're betting on another one of these smaller PGA Tour events along the tour just because of the fact that, hey, you can get a little action in it. Maybe it's in your backyard and you can go and watch it and have a little live action on it too.
Yeah, I think they definitely want to maintain the ability for spectators to gamble. I mean, I think it's going to become more and more a fabric of golf and what we're doing. But at the same time, you know, it's interesting when the last time the United States won over in Europe was in 1993 at the Belfry, and I happened to be at the Belfry. And what impressed me then, they had a betting site on site. They had a sports booking by the name of William Hill, I believe it's called.
Okay.
And you could literally go into the little tent and actually place bets at the Ryder Cup. So my guess is you're going to probably still be able to do the same thing when you go over to Rome. But I think, to Russ's point, I think that there needs to be, you know, some education based on the marshalling and the security and what is being said. I think there are going to have to be some rules laid down so that there, you know, isn't the thought that, oh, you know, I'm trying to get this guy to miss the putt because I can influence the bet right here and right now. But I think that betting will still be a part of the fabric, but I think they're going to have to address how fans use that knowledge and or information in what they say and when they say it. Because, again, I'll go back to the 2012 Ryder Cup at Medina when Bubba Watson stood on the first tee, and he wanted everybody to get loud. But what happened was he got everybody to be loud consistently, so it became to be like white noise. So he could hit the shot without any sort of fear of anything interrupting him because it was so, you know, the noise was all the same.
Right, it was commonplace. It's kind of like
a specific, yeah, commentless. Yeah, that's the best way to put it.
Yeah, like I think it. One of the things that I think of is like the free throw noise, right? Everyone gets loud when an opposing player is shooting a free throw, but when everyone's making the same level of noise, it's a little bit easier to drown out that way. You're not going to be distracted because it's just the setting of normalcy around you. If everyone's doing the same thing, it's going to be kind of tough to really have it mess with you mentally.
Yeah, and I think that, again, the the PGA Tour is just going to have to come up with some sort of a program. And I'm sure based on what happened at the BMW, they're going to have to revisit this as they start next season. And I think the amount of tolerance, or I think you'll start to see at a point where all a player has to do is point to somebody in the crowd, and that's all that's going to have to be done. Mm-hmm. And then the marshal will get involved, they'll call security, and then that's what's going to happen. Because it's one of those things. I can almost see guys, you know, wishing and begging for them to miss the putt, because then instantly they win a bet, right? And
right.
I think that's the thing we have to guard against. And it depends on how, you know, the prop bets are being made, and that kind of thing, to see what kind of bets, you know, I think the type of bets that they make, so that they aren't instantly won or lost right then and there at that moment, versus, oh, he still has a few more holes to play before I figure out whether or not he's going to, you know, win the bet, or, you know, if there's a specific prop bet, for example, how many balls over under at, you know, 17, let's just say, and you get it to that number, and now all of a sudden you're rooting for that guy to chunk it in the water because you have the over, and then you would instantly win. Those are kinds of the bets I get concerned about for the PGA Tour in the future.
Here's what my stance on some of that stuff would be. I have no problem. Guy misses a putt. You start fist pumping, maybe a little cheer. Whatever. I wouldn't personally do it, but I would have no problem with that. It's the in the backswing stuff. When the guys are in their live motion, that's where I would have a problem with it.
No, I agree. I agree 100%. I just think that, you know, we do have to remember what this game was originally built upon and preserve that. And I think, though, that, you know, spectators will show us not only where spectators want to walk when we rope and stake courses, but they're also going to show us how they want to cheer and what they want to say, given, you know, 5-6 beers deep and with their buddies. And, you know, what are the things that they're going to come up with that might be creative, might be funny, mm-hmm. but also might be annoying, and also might be influencing the competition at hand. And that would be the worst thing that could ever happen, is that we somehow influence the pure competition, the pure outcome, in an artificial outside agency of sort. And that's exactly what the PGA Tour, the USGA, the PGA of America are all going to have to be concerned with as we move forward, as gambling's becoming more of the fabric of our society.
Yep. All right, when we come back, Mike Lehman, the Director of Operations and Bowes Creek Head Pro, will join us here on the CDGA Golf Show. That's coming up next here on ESPN 1000. This segment brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort. Experience up north Michigan golf without the drive.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN.